Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Thursday. Hope you've been having a great week. Thanks for listening to the podcast and subscribing on iTunes. Give them those five-star ratings and comments on the iTunes page. If you haven't done it yet, do it right now while you're listening to the intro. And we are keeping these intros short, by the way, per your request on Twitter. So you're welcome. You're welcome, whoever did that and was kind of a dick about it, but had a point. So thank you. Give us that five-star rating on iTunes. Comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts. Whatever you want to put. Something positive about why you love the pod. A favorite app. A favorite moment. Do it right now before we get into the episode. We appreciate it. We appreciate all your Twitter and email love. It's just been a nice groove of episodes. And so many good ones in the bank right now that I wish we could drop them all in one day. And fuck, we might do that one day. Because we've got so many good ones. And it just, why not? Marin does a twofer. Why not us? Today's episode, a great episode. A guy who Brad and I have both known since we started. He might be in his mid to late 40s, but he looks like he's younger than all of us because he's found the fucking secret of being healthy and staying fit. I'm talking about the one and only Court McCown. That's right, baby. Court McCown. Great stand-up comic, great actor, great fucking dude. We talk about just dudes that are fun to be around. And that if you like sports and comedy and you're not a piece of shit and you work hard and you've got an opinion, Court's your man. You'll be great pals with this guy. And Brad and I have the privilege of calling Court a friend. This episode, I mean, Court has so many amazing stories, from parting with Robert Downey Jr. to being chased by O.J. Simpson on a golf course, to knowing Pauly Shore pre-MTV Pauly Shore, to starting an amazing comedy show at the Palms Casino in Vegas that coincided with Playboy and their Playboy comedy nights. Court has fucking done it all, and we went 90 minutes on this one because we tried to cover as much as we could. A lot of laughs, a lot of amazing stories. Court's an amazing storyteller. He was in Teen Wolf, for God's sakes. How he got that role in acting along Michael J. Fox. This is just one of my favorite episodes we've had in a while. Court crushes it. If you have a chance to see him live, do so. He's at the Comedy Store a lot, the Improv. He's on the road all the time. So anyway, enjoy the hell out of this episode. And follow Court on Twitter at Court McCown. That's McCown. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Follow the podcast on Twitter at ALN Podcast. At ALN Podcast on Instagram. I'm at Adam Ray 33 on Instagram. Brad is Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. EstoyMerchandise.com for all your ALN merch needs, hat shirts, mugs, posters. Of course, the ET promo pic that we posted on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram will be available for purchase in 2 weeks, t-shirt and poster. So head over to EstoyMerchandise.com and pre-order that shit right now. And more promo pics coming. I think we're going to make about three or four more t-shirts out of these amazing shots excuse me, that our girl Nicole Bisek took for us. You can follow her at on Instagram and Facebook, Nicole Bisek Photography. This weekend, Brad is in Toledo, Ohio at the Funny Bone, June 16th and 17th, 7:30 and 10 p.m. show. 7:30 on the 16th, 10 p.m. on the 17th. Toledo, Ohio, Funny Bone, Brad Williams, go see him. I am nowhere this weekend. I've got gigs in town, which you can check all my dates at adamraytv.com. I've got one gig in San Francisco on the 23rd as a part of the Leafly Comedy Show, me and Eric Andre. Go to leafly.com to see that, or get your tickets at adamraytv.com. And then, holy shit, I'm 2 weeks away from starting Mad TV, baby! Oh my god. It's all of July, all of August, and most of September, shooting Mad TV. I'm so pumped. The official announcement was today. So if you've seen me blasting it on every social media site, the article, they posted it, cast, photo, I mean, I couldn't be more pumped. I've worked, everything I've done up until this point has prepped me for this, and I'm planning on crushing it and bringing a lot of great and fresh comedy to the CW. So get excited for that. I'm sure more details of when the premiere date will follow, and as soon as I find that out, I'll let you guys know. So again, all my tour dates, adamraytv.com, bradwilliamscomedy.com for his tour dates, And I think that's it. Of course, Ghostbusters, July 15th. We're getting closer. The Paul Feig episode will be a few weeks before that, as well as a bunch of other great episodes. Again, stay subscribed to the podcast. Listen to it on your iPhone, Android, aboutlastnightpodcast.com, wherever you can. And now that we got the tour dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles, the merch info. Sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Court McCallum.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
You probably don't get starstruck anymore, though.
No.
Well, that and, like, I know that when I was doing Playboy comedy with you, you would tell me these insane stories. We would just be hanging out, and I would be like, oh, Court, what's going on? You're like, I just got done playing golf with Jesper Parnevik down in Florida, and we were talking to him, and, you know, because Tiger's wife was there, because she used to be the mate.
I think they were still married back then.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, well, because you're friends with he's friends with a professional golfer named Jesper Parnevik, who's a good...
I caddy for him.
That's insane!
I caddy for him on tour now. Yeah,
that's fucking insane.
Yeah. So I just got back last week. We played like a cunt on Sunday. So it was terrible. But
Tiger's wife, the one that he cheated on, who hit him with the 9-iron.
It was Jesper's nanny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
She has a twin sister, too.
That's...
Fuck, she's hot. Oh, her twin sister is so hot.
Oh, no. Stop it. I have twin nieces.
But it's
I can't hear this.
Yeah, you know, I saw them last year. I saw Elian last year. We went to see, maybe it was 2 years ago. We went to see this band that's now huge. I can't even think of the name of them right now.
Vertical Horizon?
No, it's like not. It wasn't fun. It was like another band.
Pompeii
like,
or something?
No, another band like that. I can't. I want to say, fuck, it's not.
Lumineers?
No, kind of like them.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like them.
Like 15 people, a banjo. They all at some point go.
There was like four guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to say, it wasn't Arctic Monkeys, but it was like somebody like that.
Okay. For sure.
Yeah, okay. Anyway.
It'd be great if we spent the rest of the podcast
just
trying to
naming bands. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, no, not
Imagine
that.
Dragons? No.
Yes, that was it. That was it.
Dwarf Powers are amazing.
But we went there, and Elian was there, and I was like, she was single. But then she was with this dude who's like a billionaire. But he was like older than me, and I was like, oh, I got a shot.
Yeah, but you look like you're younger than us.
But I don't have $1 billion.
Yeah.
Well, not with that attitude.
He's like huge, like billions and billions
of
dollars.
Well, it's because when you get $250 million in a divorce or $500 million or however much she got. Like
Jesus Christ.
Isn't it crazy that even with how much money she got, she still dates up?
Dates up. Buddy.
Like, she still goes
dating
like,
up,
well,
dating up.
I'm worth $500 million. I own 3 homes, but let's go for a billionaire.
Yeah,
like, that's amazing
crazy.
That they still date up. Salma Hayek is going out with a billionaire. Mariah Carey is going out with a billionaire.
It's
like,
these women, I think that part of the rationale has to be like, I've got to stick it to the guy, right? A little bit.
Well, I mean, you think like Elian was like, I got to stick it to him? No, yeah. I think the situation was she has kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, and this guy was basically... Now, look, I kind of take that stance that I'm so tired of seeing guys get just fucking reamed, you know.
Financially
for a divorce, you know, like, you know.
Be fair.
But at the same time, you know, here's a guy, you know, who's basically, you know, just banging whores left and right, and whores, and ugly whores.
Yeah,
I mean, not even
Waffle
like,
House.
Yeah, Waffle House shit.
Yeah,
and it's like, and then just gets busted cold, and it's like, you know, unfortunately, you fucking idiot.
Yeah,
you know, you could have slid out of this thing for maybe $100 million.
Right,
but no, you had to go get caught with a Waffle House whore in an airplane.
You think there was a certain amount of like. That, like, there was a like, maybe if it only had been a couple women and they were like, do you think it would be like the Waffle House? Like, she was like, you know what? I got a lot of tolerance.
I think
she fucked the girl who makes my waffles for my kids.
You know what? I think it really comes down to, and honestly, I think it comes down to attorneys. Attorneys get in there and they go, because they're going to get a piece.
Sure.
You know, so an attorney's like, look, here's what we can do. And
you're right.
And it's like
the agent trying to get Will Smith more money for Wild Wild West 2.
Yeah.
And that's why it didn't happen, by the way.
Yeah, and you're like, what? God. He's only going to make $20 million, but they want to make their 15% or their 10% of $20 million. That's $2 million. But if I can get him $30 million, that's another $1 million for
me. Jada will do it for two.
Shots fired, Jada.
And she'll do it for
you. You weren't invited
two.
To the Oscars, and you ain't invited on this podcast. Yeah.
But like, have you always been, like, you've played golf your entire life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then it's one thing, like, my dad has played golf since he was age four, and he told me, he's like, that being a golfer will. That'll open the world up, like, because everyone does it.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
You get into these, like, get into these crazy deals. You get to meet these crazy people.
And, yeah.
It's almost like a secret. The being on the court, like, I don't know.
I think there's different levels to it. If you're good and you play with these guys, like, I've played with half the PGA Tour.
What?
You know, and it's like, and I mean, it, when you're good and you play with them, it's a little more fun than if you suck. And because you got to realize all these golfers you see on the tour and all these golf, every, like, they play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You see them in the tournaments, you know, but what you don't see is Monday and Wednesday when they play in these pro-ams with these fucking hacks.
That just paid like
$5,000 to play with.
Oh, you can do that.
Oh, yeah. They do it every week.
Like a pay to play.
It's every week. Every week there's a pro-am.
Oh,
and
wow.
There's a pro-am on Monday and there's a pro-am on Wednesday. So you've got one pro with four amateurs that suck. I mean, fucking suck.
But
literally suck. Did I say that they suck? Because they fucking suck.
How bad, though? Because, like, I feel like I'm.
There's some that are okay. But you're talking about 20 handicappers that, you know, and then the worst part is they flail it off the tee, you know, into the woods, and they're just still trying to play, and it's like, you know,
now, I'm not
fuck
a,
off.
Just tap out, sit back, and watch the pro.
Yeah, enjoy yourself.
You got a front row seat to watch one of the best in the world do what they do.
Yeah.
Have you ever played, like, those celebrity
prompt?
I played one of those where I was at the Pechanga, and I was at the comedy club there, and they had a pro-am tournament or whatever, a celebrity tournament, and one of the celebrities dropped out. So they called the comedy club and was like, who's the comic? Can he play golf?
Yeah.
And whatever 18-year-old guy looked down, saw my picture, and was like, oh, we've got Wee Man here. And I go down to the golf cart the next day,
and it says
on my cart, it says Wee Man. And I'm like, son of a bitch.
Yeah,
I was so upset, and I was going to go switch it, but then my group came up, and they're like, thank God we got you. There's so many lame celebrities here that are just nobodies, and we're so glad. I'm like, oh, okay, I can't lie to these guys now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm one of those lame celebrities. That's nobody.
It's so weird, man. but, you know, there's a lot of guys, they're fun. You know, like, I caddied this last week in Tucson, and, you know, the pros, you know, I play with, you know, I caddy for Jesper, and he's really cool to the guys. Like, he'll give them swing tips, and he'll help them out, and, you know.
Some guys treat their caddies like shit,
I'm not talking about how he treats the caddy. I'm talking about how he treats the other players in the pro-am.
Okay.
You know, even though some of the guys, they were okay. We won the pro-am last week. But, but the whole thing is he's really nice. Some players don't even speak to the pro-am guys. Like, all the guys, you know, they paid $5,000, and they don't even talk to them, man. They just kind of go along. They're like, hey, how are you?
And I could pay $5,000 and dress up in, like, a hot dog costume and play?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good use of $5,000.
Oh, my God. You know what? I was going to help my nieces, you know, go to gymnastics for the next couple of years, but I think that might have to get put on the back burner.
I just go to Tijuana for a month and get a serious venereal disease for that kind of money.
Well, for five of those dollars, and for the rest of it, put it away for the hospital
bills. Exactly.
Now, when you said handicappers, I'm not fully up to term with – I don't know every term. So that doesn't mean, like, there's a guy with a lazy eye and a guy with, like, one foot.
What they do is in golf, they try to figure out a way to level so that everybody can play against anybody. So a really skilled player can play against a very unskilled player. So they call it a handicap. So let's say someone's a 24 handicap playing against a 2 handicap, they get 22 strokes advantage. So if you were to shoot 100 and the other guy was to shoot 122, they would tie.
Wow.
So that's the way that that's the way that works.
Yeah, wait, cool. But to your logic, Adam, that always makes for a great joke when I when I teed up with people and people, and they look at me and go, "What's your handicap?" I go, "Dwarfism, you asshole." But and you know what? I use it every time. It works every time.
Oh yeah, it's got to be good.
Yeah,
it's got to be good.
It's classic.
What is the Have you seen some guys get really angry? Like the few times I've golfed with my dad, he's 7-1, loves to still golf, and sometimes we've been out on courses and I'll be going a little slow because, you know, I'm knocked a couple in the woods and I'm just taking a little bit longer than expected. And there's guys behind us who don't have the patience for that. And they will sometimes hit over us or yell at us. And, you know,
That's cause for fucking fisticuffs.
And my dad is like, hey, just like, let's just play on. But no, I like got in these shouting altercations and a guy charged me on a course in Vegas. But I feel like there's even, like, to me, I was like, that was kind of crazy. But, like, I'm sure you've seen, like, straight up fights and shit. Yeah, people.
I've seen it get close. The funniest thing I ever saw happen was we were playing at Encino Golf Course, public golf course, and this was years and years ago. And O.J. Simpson had been, you know, arrested and had got. I want to say he'd gotten off, or he'd just been arrested. He had not gone in, you know, when he went in jail.
This was the memorabilia trial.
No.
This
was the murder trial.
Oh, before. Shit.
And okay. I want to say that it was before, you know, because he was originally arrested and was released on bail.
Yeah.
And I think it was right around that time, or it might have been, I can't remember, but I was with this buddy of mine, Pete, who's an older guy, and we saw OJ on the tee box, like next to us, about 100 yards away. My buddy kind of makes this motion where he looks like a gun and he just goes, hey, and goes like that. And
to not do to OJ when he's out.
OJ started kind of coming after him, you know, started kind of coming that way.
Yeah, dude, he's pretty vulnerable at that point.
But also, it's like he's got all fucked up knees. He can't really go very fast. He kind of starts making a move. My buddy Pete Hall's ass down the fairway.
You think the guy just killed a few people?
And that was kind of as far as it went. But I never laughed so hard as like my buddy Petey, who's like 49, you know, who's got a bag on his back and he's just chugging down the fairway, running away from a crippled O.J. Simpson murderer. You know?
Can you imagine if O.J. like caught up to him and like
pulled a knife out,
yeah,
and cut his head off, and then looked for a waiter to fucking stab him. Fucking murdering motherfucker.
Amazing. And they say golf is a head game. I can't imagine playing golf when you're about to go on trial for double murder.
Well, I can't remember if he'd just gotten off
or
what this. I want to say he hadn't gotten off yet.
Oh, man.
But he was out because he used to play all the country clubs and everything, and then he was kicked out of everything.
You think?
Yeah, well, you know, when you murder.
He was a bad tipper.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with the murder.
No. Yeah. Well, he just kind of lops it off.
Court, you and I have something in common, which is Tulsa, Oklahoma. My grandparents, my mom was born in Ada, Oklahoma, and so I went there a lot. But then the last 20 years of my grandparents' life, they lived in Tulsa, so I went there all the time. I went there, you know, to visit, but you grew up there. You were born there.
I was born in Tulsa. I grew up in Oklahoma City and most of my life, and then I went to school in Stillwater.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I moved out here in 84, and I moved right across the street.
Did you really?
My first apartment was right across the street.
So many people have told me their first – Harlan was just telling me that he lived
– I literally lived across the street from you, from where you are right now. Literally across the street. I lived with a buddy of mine,
just
Larry –
just staring at the apartment going, one day I'm going to do a podcast there.
Well, it's wild. It's like – I remember I moved here in 84. It was during the Summer Olympics.
Yep. Oh, wow.
So it was like
in Los Angeles.
It was a really cool time to be here. And I mean, you know, the Laugh Factory was this little bitty, skinny, like, you know, tiny, tiny club. And next to it was a Chinese restaurant.
Mm. Not Greenblatt's.
No. Between Greenblatt's and the Laugh Factory. Laugh Factory didn't have that big space.
Oh, gotcha.
Where the big room is. I mean, the Laugh Factory used to just be that front entrance and then straight down. So all the thing to the left where the main room is and the seating and everything is used to be a Chinese restaurant. And it was fucking amazing. Best Kung Pao in the world, man. And it was so good. But
84. So, I mean, you're coming – the city is just So that's got to be invigorating, right? Coming from Oklahoma.
Yeah, like yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Because well, the energy is just like so vibrant, and you're like, all right, you do want to be around, like you want to get inspired by some of that as you're coming out here to just, I mean, did you know people when you moved out here?
No, I came out here for a vacation. I came out here to just, you know, for the Olympics yeah. and to hang out with my buddy Larry. And back then I used to party really, really, really hard.
Yeah, we'll get into those stories.
We'll get
yeah.
into those stories. And and I had been up, we'd been up late, and he was working as a stand-in on a TV show, and in all the way out into like off Topanga Canyon in Woodland Hills, and this is July, you know, so it's fucking hot, man. And he goes, "Do you want to be an extra on this show?" And I was like, "What the fuck's an extra, man?" And he goes, and he kind of explained it to me. He goes, "Well, you're in a party scene. You just dress up and you just kind of, you know, you just kind of hang around. You're just kind of in the background." And I was like, "Ugh, that sounds awful." He goes, "It pays $100." I'm like, "Oh fuck, I'm in, man, I'm in." Because that was a lot of money to me.
Yeah,
man. That paid for my plane ticket and like, you know, yeah. paid for everything. Mm-hmm. So I was like, "Cool," but we stayed up really late, you know. We did some stuff.
Yeah, you played a lot of Parcheesi. Let's
play a lot of Parcheesi. I did a shit ton of blow.
That's what I meant by Capri Sun.
Yeah, I did a shit ton of blow and drank like a maniac on the way out here. And and I woke up and we had to be there at like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, man.
And I was probably up till 3:30. And I was so fucking hungover. And it's July in Woodland Hills.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
You're treated like a piece of
your
dog
cattle.
Shit.
Yeah.
Your cattle.
If you guys don't know about the extra lifestyle, it is terrible.
It's terrible.
I mean, you're really like your background.
Yeah.
There couldn't be a better term for it.
And
you're in the background.
You can't leave. They usually stick you next to someone that you don't even know, and they're like, "Hey, make eye contact with this person, but don't actually say anything." So
yeah,
you just have to like
you're miming words, yeah. you know, whatever. And it's also 84, so we're in these really like bright colored fucking outfits and it, you know, big feathered hair. I mean, I had hair all the way down past my shoulders.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It was the 80s on yeah. Sunset Boulevard. Come
oh,
on, guys.
Dude, yeah, and so we got to go inside pretty quick, and we were shooting inside in this air conditioning, and I was like, "Oh fuck, this is awesome! Okay, mm-hmm. I'm cool." And I didn't bring my extra chair, and you know, because as extras, they bring chairs to sit outside,
sure.
and, you know, to be treated like shit
yeah.
and everything. And so, I as soon as the scene was over, I was like, and I went sat down in front of one of these big yellow hoses that like blows cool air.
Oh yeah,
because mm-hmm. I was going to throw up at any minute.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime.
Are you still
I was,
high at this point?
Oh, I mean,
I don't know.
I
haven't done coke. I don't know how long the last like.
Well, I mean, I don't know that I was still high, but I was definitely. I definitely could have shit my pants or thrown up at any moment. Because it's like 104,
yeah.
you know, in Woodland Hills.
Great combo.
Yeah. And they kept telling me I had to go outside, and I was like, I kept sneaking in. And because I didn't know. I didn't know the protocol.
That cold air is for Deborah Winger.
Yeah. And they told me at one point, they go, "Listen, you're going to have to be outside." So I just went to my buddy Larry, and I go, "Larry, I'm leaving." And he goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "Fuck this, man. I ain't sitting outside in 100 fucking 8-degree yeah. heat.
I don't want to have the hot
bullshit.
Shit pants."
I go, "Yeah." I go, "I think I'm going to shit myself. So I think I really need, I just give me the keys to the car. I'll come back and get you later." And he's like, "Just chill out, man. Just, you'll be okay. You'll be okay." And that, but at the time they kept coming up behind me, and the show star was John Stamos.
Nice.
It was his first TV show. And so they kept coming up, and they go, from behind, they would go, "John, we need," and they turn, I go, "Oh, you're not John." I'd be like, "Oh, no, I'm not John." And they just leave me alone. So I kind of kept getting to stay in the air conditioning. Finally, the director of photography comes up to me, and he goes, "Hey, listen, would you be interested in being a photo double for John Stamos?" And I was like, "Yeah, do I get to be inside?
Yeah, can you get me a new pair of pants first?"
Yeah. And I was like,
"That's amazing."
And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You're basically be a stand-in," and, you know, which bumped me up, you know.
Yeah, more pay
and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I go, "I'm going to be here for 10 days. He goes, "I need someone for 10 weeks.
What?
And I was like,
"Damn."
And I go, "Can I let you know tomorrow?" And he's like, "Yeah." So I went home, talked to my buddy Larry, and I was like, "Fuck it!" I just moved here.
Holy shit!
So
wow!
And I worked for 10 weeks on this show.
Holy shit!
Yeah, so
man.
It was fun.
And so for those of you who think acting is hard, you just have to come out here, and then you just immediately get a gig.
I worked solid for 5 years, and since then, nothing. So great for 5 years, 25 years, absolute shit.
That is one of those quintessential like Hollywood. Like, I mean, I've heard of those stories, but never actually a personal account from a friend of like getting like discovered like that.
And, yeah, but it's being discovered as a
stand-in. Like,
yeah,
yeah, but you still had to be. I mean, you were there. I mean, I don't know. You thank God you had great hair and still do.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. It
and
was
I mean,
good.
And thank God you maybe you did just the right amount of coke and booze to be able to wake up and get there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you probably left me like, cool, I can still party. And like, yeah, it's actually helping me get.
Yeah,
gigs.
It's good. Yeah, yeah, it did definitely turned it up a little bit after that. Yeah.
Did you talk to Samuels?
Oh yeah, we became buddies.
Yeah,
yeah, we became friends. He was a really cool guy. It was like him. Jamie Gertz was on the show. I'm trying to think. Nobody else really that's still around, you know. But it was a blast, man. I worked on that show for like 10 weeks, and then the show got canceled. Of course, it was a shit. It was an awful show. But the director of photography was like a cool guy. I mean, he did like Three Amigos. He did
wow.
Coach for the entire season.
Yeah.
You know, their entire run. But I worked on that show, and then the second AD that was on that show, who basically wrangles all the extras, called us in January. The show ended in, I think, November or something, and I had about a month off. And then I got a call, and I did Teen Wolf. There was the guy, the second AD was
no
the guy
shit.
For Teen Wolf. And he called me and my buddy Larry, and he goes, I need two basketball players, because all the other guys
so
were principal.
So let's call
players.
Some white guys.
Well, I think what it was is he wanted two guys that he knew.
Yeah.
Because extra work, I mean, most of the time people don't give a shit. They're usually
right.
out getting high. Which we were, or but you're never there. Like, you're hard to find.
Yeah,
you know, extras they don't really give a shit because
right.
you're not getting paid that much. But it was union back then.
Yeah.
So he goes, I need two guys I can count on to be there like every single day, and you know, do what I ask you to do, because you're going to be on the court all the time, and you know, blah blah blah. So we got that, and it was great.
Yeah,
so,
but at least then you're indoors, plenty of air conditioning. You're wearing tiny shorts.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, did you know what Teen Wolf was when they?
No idea.
So you were but
Michael J. Fox. Nobody knew Michael J. Fox at the time.
He wasn't Family Ties yet.
He was on Family Ties, but you got to remember back then, Family Ties was still Meredith Baxter Burney's show. Mm-hmm. Like when that show started, it was the husband and wife were the real stars of the show.
By the way, that just goes to show you that like you can make like her name was Meredith Baxter Burney, and like there probably was an agent at some point that was like, you got to change that name, Meredith Baxter Burney.
Yeah.
Sounds
yeah.
like a sex move in Belgium. Yeah. But she's like, no, I'm gonna make it. And then she was the star. Like
yeah, she was the big deal. And then you know he kind of kept rising up and rising up. And
then switched over to being his show.
Yeah, I think later on it did because
yeah.
he did Teen Wolf, and then after Teen Wolf, he got Back to the Future.
Jesus.
So yeah. after he did Back, to, so when they
well, only because he turned down to be Stamos's hair double. That was
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. He could have done it.
That's insane. So wait, so you just the guy calls you and says, do you want to be? We need a basketball player to be in this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, this thing, and it was like, yeah, it's like 3.5-4 weeks work, and
man.
You know, and you're like, fuck yeah, I'll do it.
Like that movie, that's one of those movies that is on like every Saturday on some channel,
yeah.
like during the day. Do you still get residual
fuck
checks for that?
No,
check?
Man. Fuck
no,
man. They cut my line out, man. They cut my line out. Not only that, the studio went bankrupt. So
oh,
I think the only
no.
guys, I think the only guys that make money on that are probably Michael J. Fox
yeah.
and
Meredith Baxter Burney.
No.
She was like, if he's going to do movies, I'm taking a cut.
That movie Teen Wolf is in that movie is one of the most famous sort of movie gaffes of all time.
I still don't know if you see his dick. Is it really his dick, or is the guy just tucking his shirt in? I don't know.
I mean, I've looked to not.
If it was HD,
yeah.
if it was HD, we could tell.
We could tell. I
we
mean, I don't want to say I've looked
wait,
long
what,
and hard because that's too.
What part?
There's a time when, like, spoiler alert, they win the game. And sorry, shocker. Really, in an 80s sports movie, the good guys win.
Wow.
Where a wolf is the star player,
and he's not the wolf when he wins.
Yeah.
Oh.
Big shocker. So, like, when they're all celebrating, and if you watch it, there's a guy who's an extra. You talk about being extras and how they're kind of dicks. This guy literally was. He pulls his dick out and kind of has it just kind of hanging, and no one picked it up.
See, but I think that's weird, too, because it's like everyone from the stands rushes down to the court, you
mm-hmm.
know, because we're carrying him on our shoulders and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you see the guy in the background, but I mean, I was there, dude. I'm telling you, the guy doesn't have his dick out. He's probably got his shirt tail, like, put through as a joke, you know. But I really just, because there's too many people, like, sitting there next to him.
Someone would have looked down and went, like, why is your dick out?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, that, you know, the whole, like, dick out, like, as a joke, I don't think had really become popular until, like, 1996.
Yeah. So he was. Well, let's just say he was an innovator.
Yeah, he was an innovator.
He was like the Dr. James Naismith. Yeah. Of pulling your dick out.
I would have liked I wish, and I just heard about this like about 2 years ago.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I've never, I've tried to watch it, and I couldn't really, you know, it wasn't.
You, you sure looked and played like a hooper. How much hoop experience did you have?
I played basketball, but we all sucked. I mean, the only guy that was any good was the guy that was in the wolf costume.
Yeah, who?
That guy was a Loyola Marymount college player, and that guy could fuck it.
He was doing some moves.
Fuck yeah, he was. But he didn't, but he had a mini trampoline, so he never really was going that.
The edits make me laugh so hard because he literally jumps and then it cuts and, like, I mean, you know, it's just.
He's flying over the backboard. And you're like, all right.
But they're great. Like, that's what you want. Like, I feel like, you know, if we were to make a movie with Brad and he's dunking, like, they would be similar edits.
Pretty much.
Although.
I mean, I just think you got a great idea. I don't know if you do it.
Mini Teen Wolf?
I don't know if it's Teen Wolf. I mean, like, a wolf's too
teen
aggressive.
Pup?
Yeah.
Mighty Tiny Wolf.
Yeah.
Tiny
like,
wolf.
Yeah. Or maybe, let's say, of a wolf, because, like, a wolf is a little too aggressive for a dwarf to play. Maybe it's like a really defensively minded pug. You know?
I like this. I like where this is going.
I can pull off a pug. And
I like where this is going.
The little makeup on, but I can still jump and dunk. Sure,
it is kind of a dream of most, you know, actors who are big sports fans is to be in like a popular sports movie.
See, and I hate basketball, so it's
oh really?
I hate.
You would have loved if it was a golf movie,
no, a hockey movie.
Oh really?
There
I
you
love
go.
Hockey, man. I
there
love
you
hockey.
Go.
You play all the time, don't you? With
no, I don't
Bill
play.
Burke?
Hockey. Yeah. I don't play hockey, but but I love it.
It's Why do you love it? I've only seen it live
it's
four
times.
It's
the greatest sport on earth.
Well, I mean,
I agree.
It's the
I'm
greatest.
A huge Ducks fan. I just watched the game before I walked over here.
You guys lost to the Habs tonight. We lost.
We
lost to the Wild.
Welcome back to Who Gives a Shit.
Hockey people give a shit. It's the greatest. Greatest game to watch the game live is so
to watch the game live. Yeah. I will
it's the fastest moving sport. Second, it's one of the hardest hitting sports. And
well,
I mean,
have you seen figure skating like Tonya Harding?
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it is a hard fucking hitting game.
Yeah,
and you got guys, and you've been to a live game, so you've seen it. These guys are 6'3", 6'4". 235, 240 that can fucking skate.
Yeah,
and you're watching the game, and you forget they're on ice. You know, it's like they're so fucking skilled, and it's just, I love the fucking game. It's way better than watching a bunch of guys fucking flop after a,
Well, basketball has changed. I had this conversation a few days ago. It was like, we were just talking about the glory days of like the mid-90s, even late 80s, and like the rivalries and the fights and the amount of physical play the refs let them get away with, and you know, maybe that's why.
Like when the Pistons go into the stands to beat the fans.
I mean,
where are those games?
I YouTube that fight once a year at least, just
it's
to remind myself
best,
about the good old days.
Well, there's just the best moment ever of that event where the guy chucks his drink at Ron Artest.
Ron Artest, by the way, who's trying to stay out of it, which is crazy.
And then Ron Artest gets up and starts going in the stands, and the look on the guy's face of, oh, fuck, they're real.
He broke the fourth wall.
Yeah.
Well, because nobody.
When somebody takes the shoe and starts hitting him with the shoe, that's like fantastic.
Also, Jermaine O'Neal had like a running slot. Like at one point, there was a wide shot of during the fight of like the whole court. Larry Brown had come out and been like, you guys gotta stop it. Everybody stop fighting. This is horse shit. And then Jermaine O'Neal just does this running, sliding punch on a fucking fan. Like,
holy crap.
Unbelievable.
See, like a Mortal Kombat movie.
And then how many of those are there? Maybe 3, 4? There are websites that are dedicated to hockey fights. I mean, there have been games, like, not just a few years ago. I think it was the Flyers and the Rangers, or Flyers and the Islanders. I can't remember. They drop the puck, and the minute they drop the puck, everyone drops their gloves, and they just all brawl in the middle of the
There was that rivalry going on throughout the year, and they were chirping the whole week.
They just battled.
There's a fight every game. I mean,
not every game, but
close.
But now, do you go? Is that part of the fun in going? Is the anticipation of like the same way when I as a Mariner fan, I would go to see the Mariners play in the hopes of seeing Ken Griffey Jr. make a great catch or home run. Was it like? Is that how it is for you guys? You're like, I hope we get to see.
No, I don't think somebody knocked their teeth out. What's great about hockey and fighting is that it keeps everything in check. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you can get guys in football or you can get guys in basketball or baseball or whatever, and they can throw some dirty shit. And you got to just kind of fucking accept it. You just, you know, or if a fight does break out, they break it up immediately, whatever. In hockey, it's like you fuck with somebody, well, you get ready for somebody to come out of the fucking box and is going to fucking fight you. And they're not going to stop it until you fucking hit the ice.
Yeah.
So if you're not a tough, badass motherfucker, you better not fucking do something because somebody's coming after your ass and they will fucking take you out.
Yeah, that I played youth hockey for 6 years, and there was some sort of unwritten rule in our league, like, don't hit Brad because we're not sure what's going to happen. I don't know if you hit him and then he explodes into confetti. What happens when you hit Brad?
Also, what happens to you? Like, if you hit a dwarf on the ice, like...
Oh, I mean,
Is that seven years bad luck?
Yeah, I'm sure that's like the Stephen King novel Thinner, where like some gypsy comes out and goes, "You hit the dwarf, Thinner," and then like you just die. So no one hit me, and then all of a sudden this kid moved in and got on a team, and he's out there, and his dad's in the stands, and I don't know if he wanted to impress his dad, so he just goes, "Well, I'm gonna fucking take out the midget. He seems pretty easy to hit." So he comes in, he leveled me. He got me with a great shot. As soon as it happened, our coach looked at this kid named Mike Cassis, who at age 12 that guy.
Had a fucking beard.
Was fingering chicks on the bus.
And you're like,
outside
what's
the
like?
Bus in front of everybody.
Yeah.
He was that confident.
Like 25 year old guys are asking him to buy them beer.
I know that kid.
Cassis was. And our coach just looked at Cassis and goes, "You know what to do." Cassis jumps over the boards, and on the next shift, knocked the kid out. Straight up knocked him out. And the parents on the other team did not get upset. They're like, "Well, he did hit Brad.
He did hit Brad.
Now, that's my next question. Is that an assumed part of the culture where people watch and go, "All right, tit for tat"? Because
absolutely.
Even in youth hockey, because I've been on this kick of YouTubing parent fights in the stands at
I don't know about
games.
Youth hockey, there's not hitting and checking like there is in the NHL. But in the NHL, different than college, different than even the amateur, even the Olympic hockey and everything. Mm-hmm. It's different. But NHL, you're going to get fucking boarded.
Are you taught to not hit until you make it pro? Is that kind of like
college?
College, they do. They it's called forechecking. But and there it is. But it's not like it is in the NHL.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I would say it's kind of like. Basketball, you're not taught to flop really until you get to the NBA, because that just disgusting.
Yeah.
It's just
unless
awful.
You're taught to flop
as a baby.
It's like soccer or football for you, your European pieces of shit. But it's like, I mean, they basically, air goes by them and they fall on the fucking ground, and it's just like, and hockey, they have a penalty for that.
Yeah,
they have a penalty
For
being a pussy.
So are you a pussy if you walk out of the game with all your teeth? Are people like, "Look at that guy with his great smile"?
Yeah.
Well, they call it, the ref goes to the center of the ice, and he puts two fingers around his mouth, and he goes, "2 minutes for being a pussy."
No, does he really?
They call it embellishment. But he does that, and he kind of sticks his tongue out. And goes, fucking faggot. Get in the fucking box.
You know what I love about Court? Your just point of view in your stand-up is like the likable, like, I don't even want to call it anger, but the stance you take when you get really pumped about something. Because I feel like when I first started seeing you two, and I was like, I need like an emotional connection to what I'm talking about, because it's just way more, and you always have had that, and it's like, it's way more engaging for the audience, A, and then you can sense that you actually really give a fuck about what you're talking about, which makes me care more. Like when you're talking about on your Axis Live at Gotham thing about you as a kid used to play with some yard darts.
Yeah,
dude. Which, by the way, I didn't even know that was something.
Do you know what you ever seen yard darts?
No,
they'll fucking they'll kill you.
Yeah, they're a dart with a metal
steel tip.
Yeah,
they weigh 25 pounds a piece.
What are they used for?
throwing at each other.
What you basically do is you have these yard darts. You have red ones and green ones or blue ones or whatever they are, and they have huge plastic, you know, fins on them. Then they have these huge steel tips, and then there's a handle. And they literally are steel all the way through.
Jesus.
And my brother and I, we used to sharpen the tips on the driveway.
Of course
before
you
we
would.
Played. Because, you know, we're fucking from Oklahoma. And you're supposed to, like, have, like, little rings and you put them in the yard. But we fucked the rings, man. We would just, hurl them in the fucking air. And they literally, I mean, I have a buddy who's missing toes. Who literally, because it will literally go through your foot.
Yeah.
I mean, they are so heavy and they just...
When they dive bomb, they come with a lot of force.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like you said, they come with these little targets, and you're supposed to set the target. Like,
yeah.
It's supposed to be like the game Cornhole, where you like set the target down.
What game?
Well, that's something I played in college, but we don't like to talk about that. So, like,
everybody played that in college. Everyone had a college experience.
We all,
yes.
we all had a phase.
Yeah, so, like, you set the target out, and you're supposed to chuck the dart into the target, but no one used the targets. You just got, like, a bunch of kids together. The strongest kid, Mike Cassis, he would just come in and chuck the dart up in the air, and everyone was like, get out of the way!
Get out of the way. And you never know where it goes, but it would come down hard.
Yeah.
And no parent or, you know.
This was the fucking 70s, man. We played with shit like that. I mean, we had.
You couldn't have said that more like a 70s. This is the 70s, man. Yeah. We were fucking each other up with darts.
Yeah. Dude, we used to have a bottle rocket fights and shit. I mean, used to have, like, fireworks were legal in the city. You know, we used to have these things. I mean, back then you had erector sets, like these chemical sets that actually had uranium, real uranium in them. Yeah, they, if you look it up.
Kids were nuclear.
Kids were fucking. Back in the day, we used to buy these like fucking these scientific like little sets you would buy at the fucking toy store. You know, and they actually had real uranium in them. I mean, it was
like, got remote control cars, Playmobiles, Legos, and a fucking missile or
exactly.
chemical warfare.
Exactly. I mean, it was like everybody's such a pussy now.
Yeah.
I mean, kids today, it's like they grow up, they're just little fucking pussies.
Because you did all that, and I mean, you survived.
I survived.
What do you think?
A lot of people didn't, but that's okay.
A lot of people lost their toes.
But
they weren't supposed to.
But that's okay. That's why we weren't overpopulated back then.
That's why we didn't have 7 billion people on the planet.
Yeah,
because some people got killed off by a lawn dart.
Yeah.
What do you think you gained from that type of experience that kids nowadays with the PC programming and PC just parenting?
I think taking care of yourself. I think kids today, I think a lot of kids today, they have a difficult time being street smart. I've been on my own since I was 16. You know, and it's not for lack of love for my parents. It's just that I've been on my own. I graduated high school early. I went to college, you know, and I just, you know, it was like today you couldn't put a 16-year-old in a fucking apartment by themselves. And, you know, I mean, yes, I did develop a very bad drug problem.
in the words of the great Rick James, cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Yes, exactly. But I mean. But I'm saying, but these days, it's like, it's just, I mean.
But even that, like, you know, you went through that and got that out of your system.
Yeah, it only took about 30 years, but that's okay.
Well, hey, for some people, it takes longer.
It just seems, and I'm seeing this now, and Adam, I'm sure you're seeing it with your nieces, and I'm seeing it with my nephew and his play dates. And my sister and her husband are great. They're like, they're toughening him up.
Yeah.
But all the other kids are just like, when they fall, it's just everyone just runs around and coddles and there's so many, and like they're running around the house like putting pads on like on the sides of couches. Like, well, that's a little bit too hard of a, so let's put a pad on that. And you're just like, life, like, this does not happen throughout their entire lives. You have to
let them go.
Yeah, you have to let them get fucked up a little bit, because that's how they learn.
My nephew got sent home from daycare. He's almost two. Sent home in daycare twice in 1 week for biting kids.
Hey, well, now that's not cool.
That's a part of being a kid. Also, fucking one of the kids probably liked it. He's a sick fucking 2-year-old.
You know, but it's weird though, because I got two nephews. My brother was in the military, mm-hmm. so my brother was in the Air Force for 28 years.
Wow. There you go.
And his kids, man, they're cool as shit. And it's like, they're like, they're not tough necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're tough kids, but I'm saying they're not like toughened out. But at the same time, they have a lot of respect. Yeah. There's a lot of respect. Yeah,
and that can be, you can replace toughness with respect.
Yeah, I mean, if you, they are respectful motherfuckers. And it's like, you know, you don't see that today. You see kids walking around fucking flailing shit and just,
Well, because they have access, now that the fact that they can have phones or even just the internet is making them almost on our level, because it's like, you should be able to not have access to that info yet. And now, like, oh, really? You can Google that? I can Google that too.
Yeah, I mean, like, you see kids like 6 and 7 years old with like iPhones and iPads, and I'd say this even for my 7th birthday, I got a box. You know, there wasn't fucking anything in it. I just got a box.
But you probably filled it with drugs.
But you filled it. But you made forts and you made tanks and you did stuff. Kids today don't do that. They don't fucking know if they can't look it up or it's not a fucking video game.
Here's a survey which I think kind of summarizes the point. And this is a real survey that just came out. Almost 40% of millennials, that's kids these days, almost 40% of millennials said that cereal was an inconvenient breakfast choice because they have to clean up after eating it.
What?
Are you fucking kidding me?
They're denying themselves Cookie Crisp?
Kids, why don't you play this game? Go outside and play hide and go fuck yourself. You know, because that is bullshit.
Cereal is too hard to eat.
Fuck you.
It's cereal. I mean, the easiest thing in the world to eat.
That's what we used to. That's my mom would wake up in the morning before school. She didn't make us eat breakfast.
No.
She's like, "Do you want something to eat? There's cereal in there. Go eat some fucking cereal."
It. That's all we had.
Now kids are like, "Mom, I want pancakes. Like, how come there's no pancakes? Pancakes? I've been up at 5.
My mom's hungover. She's not making pancakes. You know,
pancakes for us was what was Sunday, maybe once a month, maybe."
Lucky bastard.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good childhood, huh?
That's pretty nice.
Yeah.
So where did you develop the comedy bug? Were your folks funny, your brother? Like,
not at all, man. I did, I used to do theater in junior high and high school. We had a theater class, which was really cool in Oklahoma, believe it or not.
Yeah.
With this woman who actually had been in California and been an actress in like the 50s and 60s. And she was this older lady named Mrs. Widener. I'll never forget her, man. And we used to do these huge like summer theater programs where it was like all summer where you built the sets, you did the whole thing, and we did like 3 weeks of shows. It was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And I was really into that. And then, and then I got into other stuff. And then,
but like who comedy, like, I mean, was.
I started doing stand up after I got sober. And I started doing stand up in 2001, 2002.
Wow.
So I didn't start until, I mean, I had somewhat of an acting career for a long time before I ever did stand-up. Always wanted to do stand-up, but never had the balls or, just never did it.
Because you saw this comedy boom that was happening.
No, I had I had nothing to do.
You weren't in that world.
I wasn't in any of that stuff. I was a huge, like, I knew Pryor my whole life. I'd listened to Pryor. I could still almost fucking quote you word for word the album Bicentennial.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's a good one. But I can't.
What was that second word?
Yes, exactly.
But like, then
can't even say that word anymore.
No. Yeah. But what you could when you were throwing darts at each
name,
other.
That was the name of the album.
Right.
The
name
of the album. Yeah. Is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. This N word's crazy.
Yeah. Well, no, that's one of them. But there was Bicentennial, and it was like he used to, it was like there's one of the cuts on there, one of his bits on there is where he's a preacher and he's like, "We are gathered here today to celebrate 200 years of white folks kicking ass." You know? And he's like, "How long?" And the choir goes, "How long?" He's like, "How long?"
So
how long?
So brilliant.
How long will this bullshit go on? And it's like, it's just the greatest, you know. Yeah. I can still quote it. I mean, I can still memorize it. I mean, I loved Pryor.
That must
love
be Pryor. Bananas for you then. I mean, when you got past the story, right? I mean, that must have been a surreal moment.
That was a surreal moment for me because I'd known Pauly for 20 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I've known Pauly forever. I knew Pauly before MTV, before he was the Wheeze.
No way.
Yeah, I've known Pauly forever.
But because you weren't doing stand-up, but just...
No, I was doing acting, and one of my next-door neighbor was a guy named Donovan Leach. And Donovan is the son of the singer Donovan, and him and Pauly went to high school in junior high together.
Wow.
So they were really close friends. So Pauly and Donovan would hang out all the time.
Gotcha.
So I'd hang out with Pauly, and we knew each other, and he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
And we used to... And then I went to the Comedy Store main room for the MTV launch of Pauly Shore's show.
Wow.
So years later, you know, I a friend of mine recommended a class. I went to a stand-up class with Adam Barnhart, who I fucking love. You know, he's the only guy I think can actually teach stand-up, if there's anybody.
Yeah, there's a lot out there trying to do it, and it's just like, you're just taking advantage of these young kids. And
But I used to do, and then I went, and then you perform on Sunday night at the in the belly room. And so I started doing that. Then I got to be part of his group. So I would do every Sunday night at the belly room. Then I did the open mics and, you know, around town and all that stuff. And then, you know, Duncan was, you know, the guy back then. Duncan Trussell was, you know, back there before Tommy. Mm-hmm. And Mitzi was around. Mitzi was there every Sunday and Monday night.
What was that like, just being in her presence?
She scared the shit out of everybody. Yeah. She just terrified everybody.
Well, because there's a woman that could literally make or break your career.
Absolutely. You know? And you know, back then it was like, you know, Mitzi was still there. I mean, she was all there. And, you know, and she would come
mentally.
In. Mentally and physically. I mean, physically she had some pains, but she was still there. I mean, she would walk. I mean, there wasn't any help walking her in. She walked in on her own. She pissed everybody off, fired people left and right, and, you know, constantly. And then, and you would showcase for her on a Sunday or Monday. And I remember Duncan got me in for a showcase, and I, you know, she just didn't, she would sit there with her little popcorn and your name would be on it. And as you would walk by, she would just have your name crossed off. And so you're just like, all right, I got to wait 6 more months.
Jeez.
And so I think I it was my third showcase. Mm-hmm. And Luca Polanka, do you know Luca?
Yeah.
Luca was there. And the problem it was is I was getting where I was, okay, I still was not a good comic. Let's be honest. I was not a good
comic.
How
many years in?
Like 3 years in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was not a good comic.
Very few are.
But Mitzi would, what the thing about Mitzi, what she would do is she would see you, and it was like she would see if you had something that you could develop. Mm-hmm. And then that's why she would pass you. She wouldn't pass you necessarily if you were a great comic, because she's like, we got enough great comics, although we didn't at the time. But, you know, she wouldn't just pass you. So, but a lot of comics, when Mitzi would be there, people would come and they'd get in her ear during the showcases, and which would kind of, because they didn't want anybody else, you know,
right? They didn't want it passed,
And so Luca was there, and Luca sat next to her, and he goes, "I'll keep everybody off her so she can watch you." And I had a not a very good set, but I had a decent set, because you're paranoid, and this is back when there's like 12 people in the OR.
Yeah,
there's 12 people,
audience
members in the OR.
But do you still have this like mentality? Just the way that like people were getting,
you're terrified
doing the Tonight Show and getting deals. So you're almost thinking like, hey, if Mitzi passes me, that could lead to something.
Well, no, because even then it wasn't like, you know, there were already like, it was already past like where, I mean, Carson was gone.
Yeah, okay.
You know, there was no, you know, it was no big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal, but I'm just saying. And then she came, and I walked by, and she goes, "You want some spots?" And I was like, and I literally high-fived my way through the fucking hallway. It was the greatest feeling
holy
ever.
Holy shit. You that day you were Teen Wolf.
Yes, I was Teen Wolf. And then the funny thing was is you'd get passed, and then you call in the next day for spots.
Yeah.
And then she'd give you like a 9 o'clock spot on like a Wednesday, opening spot on a Wednesday for 7 people. Mm-hmm. And then you wouldn't get a spot for like 3 months.
Wow.
Because she wanted to see if you wanted it. But now you could come in and perform on Sunday and Monday in the potluck.
Yep.
But back then, Mitzi was there. So anybody who was a paid regular would not go up.
Gotcha.
They wouldn't want to go up. So you could get up every Sunday, every Monday, no problem. You could just walk up at 10 o'clock. It changed over. There was no long list of friends and family and all this shit. And it was like you literally would walk in, boom. You'd go right up. And
Were those lineups like? I mean, was there a night that you had? Was there a night? I mean, like Robin Williams or somebody popping in that you were on the same show with for the first time that you were like, oh, wow, like this really is.
I guess it was probably, I'd been around about 7 years, maybe seven or 8 years. And one night I had a late spot. I think it was like a Thursday or Friday night. And I had like a 12:15 spot. No, I had like an 11:30 spot. And
which is prime.
But Chris Rock had popped in. And somebody else, and I want to say it was Chappelle or Rock or somebody like that, had popped in. So it was two huge fucking names had come in. And so it's like 12:45. And Whitney Cummings is on stage. And I'm just like, finally, I'm fucking after Whitney. I'm like, it's like 12:45. And all of a sudden the rooms, you know, it emptied out, and all of a sudden the room starts filling up. There's people just gathering in, and it's just filling and filling and filling. And I look to my right, and there's Robin Williams. And it's like, so Whitney brings up Robin Williams, and Robin, and the room is packed now.
Right.
You know, and I'm just like thinking, oh, fuck. Now I got to follow Robin Williams. But I figured, you know, whatever. So, I mean, I didn't get, at that point, I was so, like, I just want to get the fuck up and get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And so Robin get up. He did about a half hour,
yeah.
Which was great. He was there to make an amends for, he had just gotten out of rehab again. And so he's making an amends to the Comedy Store because he had done a benefit when they needed a new roof, and he was just hammered. And he didn't I don't know that he what happened, but he was there to, you know, to make an amends. And then he gets off, brings, you know, they bring me up. He doesn't know who, they don't ask him to bring somebody up,
right.
So he just gets off. And I get up, and people start getting ready to get up, and I go, hey, sit the fuck down. Cosby's in the parking lot.
Yeah. You
know? And it was good.
Yeah, which works even double nowadays, because now you wouldn't want to go in the parking lot. You're like,
exactly.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not good.
But it was one of the best sets I've ever had in there. It was fucking fantastic.
Well, of course, because the crowd's already amped.
They're amped.
They're pumped.
See, everybody always says, I would hate to follow so-and-so.
No,
I would hate to follow that person. No, you want to follow somebody great.
You want to ride the wave.
You want to be, because it doesn't matter. You're not going to be, I mean, is it hard to follow Bill Burr? Fuck yes, it is.
Sure.
Is it difficult as shit to follow Bill, you know, somebody like that? Yes. Is it hard to follow Brad Williams?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard to follow Adam? Yes, it is. But I would rather follow a great comic than someone goes up and eats shit and you have to bring the room back up. You know,
yeah, you gotta bring them back to life.
Yeah, it's Tommy, man, when Tommy was the fuck, I used to have to do the main room, and I used to have to follow Barry Diamond. And Barry Diamond would be on stage singing with a dog, and the dog would be heckling him, because the dog would be barking at him, and the crowd would just be like ready to shoot themselves. And I'd walk off, and I would bring the crowd back, and you know, I'd come off, and I'd go, Tommy, seriously?
Yeah.
What the fuck, man? And he goes, well, we really need someone to bring it back after Barry. And I'm like, why the fuck do you have Barry? You know, it's like, why do we have to bring it down?
Yeah.
Why can't we just leave it up?
Why can't I bring it more up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like you look at the lineups now at the Comedy Store. They're solid top to bottom.
They're really
awesome. You know, they're good.
But Adam's doing great stuff over there.
Adam's doing a great job. Adam, you know, I mean, he's fucking me over left and right, but it's still, he's doing a great job. I'm on at 12:30 tonight, by the way, if this is up.
There you go.
After like 94 other people.
But. Well, like one thing that I love, that I've always loved about you, Court, is you've never held back with whatever you were thinking, rather be.
Try not to.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why people should check out your podcast that you do with Joe Bartnick, Insensitivity Training. Like, and that's what it is. Like, I love that you guys say it in the title.
Yeah.
Like, hey, don't come listen to this podcast if you're going to be offended by like the basic shit, because you guys get into it.
Has that stem, just that mentality, is that, and that outlook, is that just stem from, I mean, always as a kid, like being like, I'm not going to be PC or not say what I think?
You know, I mean, that's not necessarily true. I mean, I do a show with Pat O'Brien.
Yeah.
You know, Pat O'Brien and I do a show together.
Pat O'Brien
is the fucking greatest.
The Pat O'Brien, good friend of mine.
He's so fucking good. I love him.
He's the man.
He narrated.
Brad and I went to Cabo, ourselves.
That's so gay.
I mean, no. What the concept?
We met girls there.
The concept wasn't gay. What we did in the hotel
that was gay. Yeah,
the couple's massage on the beach at 10 a.m.
Yeah, that.
Let's
was
be
gay.
Very clear.
Yes.
That was gay.
Yes.
The inserting things inside of each. That was
that
gay.
That part, but
not
yeah,
going.
But the intent wasn't. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I don't turn down a dare. no, but he lost a limbo competition the first night we were there, and so anyway, we videotaped it. I'll send you the video. But we went on Jay Moore's sports show, and Pat O'Brien was in the thing, and we showed him the clip and had Pat O'Brien commentate over the whole video of Brad losing the limbo competition.
That's so good.
And he was, I mean,
he's so, like, because he just immerses himself in that world. He's like watching, and he's like going, well, I haven't seen a dwarf lose a limbo competition since the world famous stint in 87. I was there. Irvin Magic Johnson was my co-host. Irvin Magic Johnson, good friend of mine. And like,
and you know what's funny is, like, I said to him, I go, we need a fucking vacuum cleaner to clean up all the fucking names you drop, you know. in a fucking conversation.
How did you get involved with him?
We've been buddies for a while, and he started this show, and it's called Everything All the Time, and we do it's a live show we do on Tuesdays, and
where at?
Well, we're moving, we're doing it on you can see it on my Facebook or on Pat's Facebook page. Cool. It's the link is up there. I don't even know what the fuck it's on.
Yeah.
But we're going to move we're kind of in the process of moving to this company called TuneIn, you know, which is this
TuneIn Premium.
TuneIn. So we're going to do some stuff with TuneIn, and but Pat is so we're a little more PC. I'm not, you know, as insensitive, but it's just, it's hard not to say what you think in any circumstance. I mean, it's just like today we're talking about the NCAA, we're talking about the brackets, and it's like, and I don't give a fuck, you know, but that's the subject. So, we got to come out, you know, so you got to talk about that. Do I really want to say that, you know, if these guys weren't playing basketball, they'd be stealing people's purses? Yes, that's what I really want to say. And is the NBA just full of criminals? Yes. Is that what I think? Yes. But
I do it out of respect for Pat.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, but that's the thing is, I'm never disrespectful to people. In a sense that, you know, if you're respectful to me, I'm respectful to you. You know, I'm a pretty nice person.
You are.
For the most part.
You are.
You know, I'm not a dick to people. There's very few people I hate. You know, there's
that's good.
There's very, very few.
Well, you know? and that helped contribute to the fact that when you were doing Playboy comedy in Vegas, that was the best comedy show in Vegas.
Talk about funnest... being a nice guy. You created a road gig for people that was like the most fun ever.
It was the greatest road gig.
It was the greatest gig ever.
It was.
How did that? If for people who don't know, it was at the Palms Casino.
Yeah,
which was, I mean, Playboy's.
It was. Well, what happened was, is I started a show. I started a show at the Palms Casino. I called it the Hollywood Comedy Tour, and with a buddy of mine, Paul Hughes, we did the show together. And we used to do a show called PCP Comedy at the Comedy Store, and then we turned it into rock comedy. And it was like, and we had Jay Davis and Josh Nassar were involved, and you know, it was this really great thing. But what I did was back then is I got step and repeats. I got sponsors. I was the first one that started doing this. And I had like Billy Morrison playing guitar instead of a DJ. I had Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols.
Wow.
You know, I had these guys. So we started that out. And then I talked George Maloof from the Palms into coming out to a show. And the show was Harlan Williams, Dane Cook, Sarah Silverman. You know, it was in the main room. So it was
could have had some good people for him.
Yeah.
Jesus.
How did you get them? You just basically said, hey.
Well, I paid everybody.
Yeah.
I paid everybody like 500. I mean, I wasn't paying them like $50. I was paying people like $500 for an in-town gig. Mm-hmm. You know, and we would do these shows. And so Maloof came to a show and he's like, come to the Palms. Do this at the Palms. So we started the show at the Palms. We did it for about a year and a half, 2 years. And I became really tight with Michael Morton, who owned all the nightclubs. He owned the Ghost Bar and Rain and, you know, Nine Steakhouse and all this stuff. And he told me, he goes, we're building a Playboy Club. And I was like, what? And he goes, we're building a Playboy Club. And for, you know, your listeners that don't know, Playboy Clubs were the original comedy clubs in this country before the Comedy Store, before the Improv.
Yeah, that's where guys like Dick Gregory
fucking
and
fucking George Lenny Carlin.
Bruce,
I mean, everybody, that's where they performed.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And so I was like, I got this great idea. And so I talked to Michael and I go, you got to get me in touch with the guy that runs Playboy Entertainment. So we went to Hef's 80th birthday party at the mansion.
What?
Which was fucking awesome.
Best party ever?
Best party ever.
Holy shit. Can we just go on a little tangential run here and just...
I got my dick sucked by the monkey cages. That's how fucking great that party is.
How many times in life can you say that?
Yeah, I got my dick sucked by the monkey cages.
Now, was that a band from Australia? Who were the monkey cages?
Yes, well, there's these like animal cages down there. So,
it was holy
fantastic.
Shit.
Wait,
real quick, who's at that party?
Everybody.
Everybody.
Everybody is at that fucking
party. So you got your James
I mean, it's
Cons.
John Elway.
Yeah.
John Elway is there. I mean,
oh,
it's
man.
Like...
Oh,
it's
man,
fucking,
he's my hero.
Yeah.
What was he doing?
It's everybody.
Was he doing hero stuff?
He's like limping in pajamas. You know, that's what he's fucking doing.
Which is the name of his solo album.
Yes. everybody's there.
And
I mean...
Those parties, I had one opportunity to go to the Playboy Mansion, do the Midsummer Night's Dream party when my buddy was dating Sarah Jean Underwood, the 2007 Playmate of the Year.
Yeah.
He invited me to go as his plus one with them. I was dating a girl in Seattle at the time who... gave me a hard time about it. And I literally
she should have.
She was like, yeah, but I was so like, she's like, why do you want to go? I go, babe, I'm not going to do anything. Like, I'm just not. Like, I go, but I want to go. She goes, why do you want to go so bad? I go, do you remember when you were a kid and you heard about Disneyland and you always wanted to go and you're like, what, the teacups? You get to meet Mickey? I want to meet Mickey. And I bet she's got great tits. And I like, I want to, like, dude, I just want to see it live.
Dude, this is Disneyland and you get to fuck Mickey. You know? This is Disneyland and you get, and Mickey will suck your dick.
It's called a Goofy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, the Playboy Mansion, you know, not now. It's not now.
Of course.
Now they're out of money. It's right. not, but there
but
was
you still
a time.
Went, yeah.
But there was a time when the Playboy Mansion parties were, you know, it was half invited people. You had to be on the guest list.
Mm-hmm.
There was no plus ones. You know, it wasn't, I mean, you had to be on the guest
list. So it was a very tight.
Yeah, very tight. Girls couldn't bring their boyfriends. Playmates didn't bring their boyfriends. You know, you had to go there. And the thing that was cool about it was if you made the guest list, you kind of got this check by your name. Because there's like 1,500 girls,
yeah.
And there's like 500 guys.
Oh my God.
And so the deal is, it's like, you know, if you're there, you were invited by Hef, or you were invited pretty much by Hef. You had to be approved by Hef. Everyone had to.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a tough, I mean, even when I did Playboy Radio, it was a tough, like, we still had to get, like, I mean, I would go interview Hef once a fucking week.
What?
And still, you know, I had to get passed by Hef.
So what was his approval system like? He had to, like,
well, it was just,
he knew similar, you know, interest?
Well, no, it was kind of one of these deals.
Play Hot Cross Buns on the clarinet.
Well, you know, he would literally go, I mean, I can't remember the woman's name that was the assistant forever and ever and ever. I can't remember her name.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I'm talking about, the older lady there.
Yeah.
And literally, she would go to Hef and she would have, listen, we've got Court from Playboy Radio. He's like, and Hef would be like, yeah, you know what? I like that guy. Go ahead. Let him come in. You know, and then there were other people that worked for Playboy mm-hmm. that he would go, no, don't want him here. Too creepy. You know, and
he's the gatekeeper.
He's the fucking gatekeeper.
So you gave up. Yeah. I mean, you developed a rapport with him.
I developed a rapport. Yeah. Well, because we used me and your old co-host,
Kevin Klein,
we used to interview. We used to go and interview Hef. And we had to do it at a certain time. You know, you had to do it like 12:30, 1 o'clock or whatever, mm-hmm. right after he woke up. He'd come down in his pajamas. We'd go in his library, in his little office, whatever, and we'd do these things.
It's called his fuck studio, by the way. It's not an office.
And I would always go take a shit in his like bathroom just because I always
how nice was it?
Yeah, it was nice, man. But I would always just go, I'm going to go take a shit now, man, just because I can. And
hey, you know what? If I ever go to the White House, what do you think I'm doing?
I'm taking a shit.
I'm taking a shit.
No, that must have been a new experience to do it outside of your pants.
Yeah, it was. It was. And we'd go there, and it's like, and you'd start talking to Hef, and after about like 30 minutes, his denture cream would start like loosening, and he'd start chomping, and that's when you kind of knew the interview. His fucking, you know, his teeth would start dropping, and you kind of like, oh, fuck, here we go.
Oh, my God.
I think that's why he only really comes downstairs for short periods of time, because I think just I just don't, the teeth don't stick.
At these parties, though, he was showing face.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, he'd come down, man. I mean, I used to hang out with a girl who was his girlfriend for a period of time after, you know, one of the girls left. And it was like, yeah, I mean, he's still, you know, still got his dick sucked.
Would he ever do anything as the host? Would he ever show up and be like, you know, like, time to take this party up a notch? Like, and either, like, play a cool guitar solo or just be like, fuck somebody on the roof and let everybody watch and go, this is my house, motherfucker.
I would have loved to have been around in the, like, 60s when he was probably like that. When he was probably, like, you know.
Hostess with the mostest.
Yeah, you'd probably walk in and he's just like, let's get this shit going. Everybody do a gummer. Let's go.
I'm going to ride a motorcycle through the kitchen.
But he was in, even up until the, like, I think mid-late 90s, he was still, like, he was into ecstasy and he was into that shit, you know.
So but, I love hearing that.
But it was, like, I think around 81, I mean, when he turned, like, 81, 82, mm-hmm. you know, I think he, because he'd had a heart attack. I think he'd had two heart attacks at that point.
Yeah. And I mean, if you start slowing down at 82,
God bless you.
Yeah,
God,
well,
God
I mean, his slowing down right now.
Yeah.
I mean, even at 84 or 85, whatever, 86, whatever he is, he's still finger banging Crystal Hefner,
yeah.
who is hot as shit. And if at 86 I can just finger bang her, I'll die a happy man. I mean, she's smoking hot.
Yeah.
I don't care for what if she, I mean, God bless her. You know she's there for the money.
Sure.
Who gives a shit?
Who cares, she's there because she's there for the right reason. Reasons, Court.
Yes, she loves him. She loves his cuticles fingering her as she lays there just dreaming of some basketball player who stole her purse last week.
Ties it all together.
So Maloof says yes, do the show at Palms.
Yeah.
And then just game
on. And
then
we did a couple years. And then after a couple years, I found out they're doing Playboy Club. Mm-hmm. And I met the guy at the Playboy Mansion. I said, I have an idea I'd like to talk to you about. He goes, come in the office on Monday. I'd love to talk to you. I went and I pitched him this idea as Playboy comedy. I said, you guys, this is where it started. You know, I said, we should have a show. We'll bring the new Playmate out every month. She'll do our show. We'll introduce her. She'll sign some, you know, magazines.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do signings at the Palms, and then we'll do a, you know, then she can go up to the Playboy Club and, you know, be the guest of the evening, whatever. And this guy's like, I fucking love this. And we had a 3-piece jazz band.
Yeah,
you know,
it was classy.
We had a classy thing, and so they're like, we fucking love it. And the Palms loved it, you know. And
it fit their vibe, too. You know, yeah, like, that was the cool... like.
But, I mean, you got to look at who we had. You know, you look at the comics we had. I mean, we had Jim Norton. We had Brad Williams was a regular.
Bobby Lee.
You came, you know. I mean, dude,
that was... When you got me in there, I was... Because I had known about it. So, it's like, when I finally got to Coma, dude, that was like... The same way you, like, getting past the store and having Mitzi, like, that to me was like a rite of passage. Like, I was like, oh, man, I must be getting better, you know?
Because it was so fun to, I always used as many guys as my friends as I could, much as I could, you know? And it just, you know, and I paid people.
Yep.
I gave them airfare.
And it was a road gig. And it's like, at that point, especially for me, it was like, I just started to kind of do some stuff with Bobby, but I hadn't really... So you need that experience, like
And for those who aren't comics, here's what comedy is like when you do a gig in Vegas. If you're not David Spade just doing a one-nighter, you go to a club, you're doing two shows a night, every night, for an entire week, 7 and 10 or something like that, so you don't really have time to go to a nice dinner, you don't have time to see any other shows.
You can't see Celine Dion, you have to YouTube it.
Yeah, you're not doing anything else, and then for food, they just give you a pass to go to the employee cafeteria, which is like basically, which is like sucking on your dog's anus.
It should be called, here's where you get diarrhea.
Yeah, it's awful. Like, gigs in Vegas.
Salmonellas.
Yeah. You get excited because you're like, I'm going to Vegas to do gigs. And then after day three, you're like, kill me. Your gigs were one show Thursday.
Yeah.
One show Friday.
No, we did two Friday and two. We did five shows. One Thursday, two Friday, two Saturday.
Two Friday, two Saturday. And then, like, but it was so, like, okay, 3 days in Vegas. Perfect. I don't want to be in Vegas.
Not only that, you got a table up at the Playboy Club.
Yes, dude.
We used to have,
the pool was awesome.
The pool was great. You got the run of the fucking casino. It was so fun. And we had playmates. You know, we had playmates all the time,
that's the first time I met a playmate.
Oh, yeah, I got some pictures that are amazing, which I hope I don't ever get hacked.
I'm trying to think some of the playmates you were with.
Claire Sinclair.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Claire Sinclair, who was Playmate of the Year, who is now a pinup.
She's like one of the pinup girls.
Her and I are still close, so it's awesome. Like, she was great, met her there. There's a few others that were just – and the one thing I love is that you and Paul did it right with the Playmate, where you just kind of had her up, you asked her a few questions, and then
get the comics on.
It was perfect.
Dumber than a bag of hammers. You know, fucking morons. Not all of them. Not all. Yeah. Most of them.
Did you ever let any of them try comedy, or did they ever ask her?
No. We had, we used to do Playboy comedy at the Brea Improv.
Yeah.
And we did that. You did that quite a few times. You guys did both.
A couple times.
But we did Brea Improv and Irvine Improv, and we had one playmate who unfortunately has passed away, but she used to get so fucked up. And mm-hmm. she would go on stage, and we couldn't get her off stage. Oh, and it was like, oh, we had to just get her the fuck out of there. And it was like so bad.
Yeah.
But no, we wouldn't really. You didn't want them to do anything. They would always say some, you know, kind of some little, you know, Paul would usually do it. I didn't really have the patience, mm-hmm. you know. And it was like, I mean, I just want to fuck them. I don't really want to talk to them.
I saw there's this great video of you, I think, from Memorial Day weekend at the pool, I think, out there. Do you remember doing that?
What was that?
You were doing like just man on the street stuff at the pool, just basically being like, we're going to have a great time. You were interviewing just all these hot girls
at
the pool.
I used to do all the video for the Palms.
Yeah.
So I used to host all their videos. So okay. I had some great ones. I mean, I had some fun. Like, I did New Year's Eve, some New Year's Eve there with like Kid Rock and Navarro. And, I remember Navarro, one of the funniest things I ever said. I go, I was like, why are there always like, you know, hot chicks within like 10 feet of you all the time? He goes, it's very expensive. It's very, very expensive. You know, and he was just, he's so fucking great. But it was so much fun. It was a lot of fun.
Now, Navarro, I mean, you told me at one point too, and stop me if you don't want to talk about, but some of the just the superstars you've partied with, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. Robert, back in the day, back when he was doing... what was that?
Back when he was still fun.
No. When he did the Less Than Zero. When he was shooting Less Than Zero, he was a little bit fucking out there. Well, so was I, but yeah.
How'd you even meet him?
We were at a club. I was at a club with another buddy of mine, and I won't mention a lot of names, but there was this we ended up going back to some dude's house. Like we were like, it's like the club's closed. It's like 2 a.m. and you know, everyone's just gacked out of their mind. And someone goes, well, I got blow. And we're like, well, let's go to your house. You know,
it still happens. I feel like just not as
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
I'm sure it happens all the time. It's just it. There was something, you know, there was something fun, you know, about it. For a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always kind of really ugly.
Yeah.
Because in the end, I mean, it's like, you know, ugh. You know?
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's always, yeah. There's not too many great stories that start with, well, I did coke solid for 20 years, and now I'm, thank God I did that. Like,
yeah. You don't just hear, like, listen, the heart attack meant nothing, you know? It's like, it was no big deal.
I was going to have it anyway.
Yeah, it was going to happen at 37 anyway, you know? Yeah, but...
How was he to party with? I mean,
he was great. I mean, he was a good dude. Yeah. He was a lot of fun. I mean, at that point, at like 4:35 in the morning, you know, there's nothing.
Nobody's himself.
There's nobody. It's not fun sitting around a big pile of coke drinking warm scotch. You know, it's just it's just gross.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know,
something to tell the kids.
Yeah. But I mean, I've been to, you know, I've seen it all. You know, I've seen it all. I mean, I mean, I used to work at a place called the Monkey Bar. And this was back in 1992-93. And this bar was owned by Jack Nicholson and Don Henley.
Holy shit.
And and all these guys, there were these producers, these music producers and all these different people. And it was where Heidi Fleiss worked.
Yeah.
So Heidi Fleiss was there every night with her girls.
Her
girls sat at the booth in the bar, and that's where they worked out of. So it was like all this shit was going on. And, you know, and you would work there, and it was like crazy amounts of cocaine. And, I mean, insane amounts of cocaine. And it would
Jack was all about it.
Well, everybody was. Everybody was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was just like, you know, the way it was set up. And you'd be like, I was a waiter there, you know, and it was like, I just moved back from New York, and I was, you know, working at this restaurant. And, you know, you'd go in, and the guy would go, hey, listen, you got to work late tonight. And you're like, ah, fuck, mm-hmm. you know? And he'd go, but there's a little butter plate up there for you. And you pull down the butter plate, and there's a huge mound of coke. You're like, ah, all right, I'll stay, you know? And it was like, and that's what it was like, you know, because you would just, it was crazy.
Now we kind of know about that. Like, I've had the old story happen to me where a comedy club show guy like tried to pay me in cocaine.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you fucking crazy? I'm 4 foot nothing.
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen if I take a bump of this? Like, your ceilings will be spotless. I'm not gonna do this shit. But I've heard stories between your coke stories, between Ralph Garman from K-Rock's coke stories. Like, they're just unbelievable. It's like, wow, I kind of wish I did it, but now I'm still
there comes a point where it's like, you know, I look at someone now and it's like, if you're in your 40s and you do cocaine, you're a fucking idiot. You know, and I'm not saying that it's
move on to OxyContin.
Move on to psychedelics. You know, but I mean, we didn't have. I mean, it's like you guys. You know, you guys have legal weed now.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it just pisses me off. You know, just fuck you guys. You know, fuck all you with your fucking pot cards and all you people. I've been sober, man.
Was there one defining thing? I'm always curious. Was there one moment?
No, I mean, I remember I had a birthday party. Some moron let me use their house up on Mulholland Drive for like my 37th birthday. Mm-hmm. And I had like 350 of my closest friends. I didn't know anybody there.
Isn't that always the case in Hollywood?
Yeah, and I was like, and I got so far. I don't remember really much about the party. Mm-hmm. And I went home with this woman. I swore I'd never, you know, that it was like a bad idea.
Yeah.
It was like my manager, you know, and it was like, ugh, this was a bad idea. Mm-hmm.
At least you had some affiliation. There's a comic buddy of mine who got sober because he tried to fuck his cousin at a family reunion while he was high on mushrooms, ecstasy, and cocaine. So at least
that was a come to Jesus moment.
Yeah, at least at least your relationship wasn't that strong.
No. God, so, that's awful.
Well, to be fair, you're from Oklahoma. That's kind of expected.
Yeah, it's kind of expected. Second cousin's not a big deal.
That's where my mom is from. How dare you? And court.
A second cousin, that's legal.
So you go home with the manager.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. The one day I was driving home and, you know, and if anyone, you know, I mean, there's people that believe that I'm a quit. They say, oh, quitter. It's like, I'm not a quitter. I retired. I'm like Barry Sanders. Like, I got out before the brain injury.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, I had a heart attack when I was 36. You know,
did you really?
Yeah, I had a heart attack. I was on the shitter in Las Vegas. I'd done almost an ounce of blow.
You almost pulled an Elvis?
I almost pulled an Elvis.
You almost died on the shitter?
I was on the shitter. You know what's funny? You say that. I was on the shitter. I was thinking, I'm not famous enough to die on the shitter. You know, I got to get the fuck out of here,
boy,
man.
Boy, Court, if that's not the name of a memoir, I don't know what.
Yeah. That's amazing, dude. Yeah.
That's amazing.
But I can't die this way.
Yeah, I'm not famous enough. But, but I ended up, I went another like 10 months and, you know, I was driving home one day and I just literally was like, I didn't want to be home without drugs or booze. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to be with myself. And I think most people that struggle with drugs or struggle with alcohol or struggle with whatever they struggle with, it comes a point where you've anesthetized yourself for so long, you don't know what it's like to be yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're afraid to be there. And so I needed help and I got help, you know, and it's been 14 and a half years, you know, and it's like, but if I were to drink, I know it. It's like, because I tried it so many times. Like, mm-hmm. if I only smoke 6 joints a day, you know, because that's what I used to smoke, like 5-6 joints a day.
Wow.
That was a norm. That was just norm.
Jeez.
And you know what's crazy?
That sounds like a lot to me, or not, I mean, a fine amount, but like Snoop probably smokes like 40 joints a day.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But probably not. Because,
you don't think?
No, I mean, it's like...
He just has a couple that are really strong.
He probably... You know, it's like one of those things where his tolerance is so high. My tolerance was so high.
Okay, mm-hmm. So you couldn't even maybe...
I mean, I got high, but not like, you know, if you smoke 40 joints, you know, you're going to fucking curl over and suck your own dick. You know?
Now I might want to smoke 40 joints because that sounds entertaining.
Yeah. No, but I mean, but you build up a tolerance level, but... you know, it's like, I mean, I was the kind of person that would go, I'll give you a typical night. So a typical night when I was in my, you know, when I was bad was I would go over to my dealer's house. I'd pick up an 8-ball blow, 3.5 grams. I'd pick up an 8-ball. I would stop at the store and I'd get a 12-pack of beer, you know, on the way home. Then I would divide up, then I would get home, start drinking the beer, and as I divided up the 8-ball, because you know that's a lot of blow, and so I would divide it up into packets, you know, like one, you know, one for me, one that I shared, which is the really smallest one, you know, mm-hmm. that was the smallest one, one sure. for later, right. you know, and then, you know, and then you would divide it up, and while I'm doing that, I'm snorting coke, and I would drink almost a 12-pack of beer, you know. Jesus. Then I would get in the shower, and then I would go out. And then I would go out and I would drink between 15 and 20 Jack Daniels, scotches, whatever I was drinking that night. Jeez. I would drink that, do blow, come home, and, you know, and party till, you know, 6, 7 the next morning, go to the liquor store, get more booze at 6 or 7, keep drinking, and then smoke some pot and try to sleep around 1, 2, you know, in the afternoon. And that was kind of...
Rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat. And that's like, that's no way to live. You know, no. I wasn't a person like, and, you know, there's people that can go out and they could do two lines, and those are the people I want to stab in the face. You know, I was not that person. If right. I did one line,
you were doing
or if
it
I
all.
Did one drink, if I yeah. had one drink, I would call the fucking Coke dealer, and I knew about 10. So it was like, yeah. oh, you're not home? Oh, I'll fucking just call this guy.
Right.
And so I was never someone who could just have one. And, yeah. You know, people say, oh, you have no willpower. It's like, go fuck yourself. I had a lot of willpower. I just didn't used to exercise it.
So what is your vice now? I mean, I think we all have one, yeah?
I don't know that I mean, I smoke, you know, I'm cutting that out. I'm down to my little vape. I don't even use I don't use one of those big gay vape pipes now. I've got my little tiny, my mini vape, you know, which
you
I
go.
Do.
Do and, you do yoga or meditate? I mean,
I play golf.
There it is.
That's what I do. I meditate. I meditate twice a day, every day. I've done that for almost 10 years.
But I keep hearing people like...
it's the greatest Neyland thing you can ever do.
About it.
It's the greatest thing you can
Katie
ever do.
Katy Perry does it. And
Sklar Brothers. I mean, to go from Katy Perry to Sklar Brothers, that's a logical jump. But yeah, the Sklars were telling me about it too.
If you can ever learn, if there's anything you can ever learn to do to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. it's meditate, man. It reverses the aging process, you know, because stress ages you. Mm-hmm. Stress ages you, and stress causes you to be sick. What meditation does, forget the spirituality part of it, fuck that. It relieves stress, because when you meditate, your brain actually goes to sleep while you're awake, and that doesn't happen any other time except when you're in a deep, deep, deep sleep. Even REM sleep, mm-hmm. your brain is awake. Yeah. Your brain isn't a muscle. Your brains are neurons that are firing. And so your body is the muscle. So your brain is, your neurons are telling your body what to do. When you meditate, your brain actually shuts down for a period of time. And when that does, your body doesn't know what to do because it's used to being told what to do. So it doesn't know what to do. So it releases stress. Fuck. So while you're sitting there and you can feel the stress going out of your body. And wow. It's fucking amazing.
Do you have like a meditation pad? Like did you buy a whole like?
No,
kit?
I went,
is there a kit?
No, I do a thing called Vedic, which is very similar to transcendental TM meditation. Yeah. You have a mantra and you do the mantra.
You get to pick your mantra, or is there like a
no,
like a baby book name? You get to pick.
They give it to you. It's like, you know, you just pay a shit ton of money for some bullshit name, you know, bullshit mantra, whatever it is. But it's worth it at the end of the day. You know, I mean. Everyone's going, ah, fuck, we went from cocaine to fucking meditation.
Those California hippies.
Yeah, fucking assholes. Yeah. I want to hear more about Playmate pussy. Yeah. But it does. It changes your life. It helps you. It really relieves an amazing amount of stress, and it changes the way you react to other people.
Which is helpful in this business because, just like you're saying, like react, like the amount of people
amount
you have to deal with and bullshit.
Amount of times I wanted to take Tommy and pull him through that. That fucking, you know, that fucking window and beat him within an inch of his life.
Throw a lawn dart at his.
Fuck! I hate that guy. You know. But.
Well, one thing I love about you, Cord, is whenever I see you out, whenever I see you at the store, whatever, you always have a story. You always have a good word. You're always kind to the people around you, and it's just always good to see you when you're out. There's never been. I don't think I've ever been out and seen you and had a bad night that night, and that is the honest to God truth. Whether it be Vegas, whether it be
well,
LA,
I always
whatever.
Leave before it gets ugly.
That's the key.
Yeah, but he's right. Like there was a handful of guys. Like remember when I first like was hanging around the store that made me feel comfortable to be there, and you were definitely one of them. And I don't know why.
Like I don't know why there's this. You know, yes, it is a pain in the ass because there's shit tons of comics. It's harder to get spots. The spots are worse. There's fewer, blah, 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 yeah. blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is it's not it shouldn't change the way you interact with other comedians. It's not like the acting business where you're all auditioning for the same role.
Yeah.
You know, if you're funny, you're funny. You know, and unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is. And, or fortunately, that's the way it is, I should say. But it's like, there's nobody I really have a problem with. There's nobody right. I don't like. I mean, there's people that will walk up and are assholes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, you know, go fuck yourself. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. if you're not there and you're not friendly, You know, it's like,
what are you doing?
You and I have always been friends. You and I have always been friends. It's like, why wouldn't you be?
Yeah. Sure.
This business is tough enough. Why would you?
We get to have a great life. We get to make people laugh for a living. We get to
shit in Hugh Hefner's house.
Yeah. In his fucking office.
That's
his office.
I want to encourage all our listeners to A, subscribe to your podcast, Insensitivity Training. Yeah. It's with Joe Bartnick. And just look up Joe Bartnick.
Joe Bartnick is...
He sounds like a 92-year-old man, but trust me, he's just funny as fuck.
Why'd you pick him as a co-host?
You know what? It was like Joe and I have been friends. Joe used to do Playboy Radio. Yeah. I got Joe on Playboy Radio.
Joe Bartnick.
I just wanted somebody... that would just not, would just say what the fuck they wanted to say.
Would be all in.
And Joe Bartnick flat out.
Fuck yeah, he does.
I mean, we recorded in my apartment and I have to be like, Joe, shh. I don't want to get thrown out of the apartment.
Neighbors,
Not even neighbors. Oh. I mean, it's like coming down the street. You know?
He's loud.
And he's a loud but guy. I love Joe. I mean, he's just one of those guys that is like, and the other thing too is you want Joe on your side. You do not want.
Dude.
Well, no, it's like if you've ever seen Joe, like if he doesn't like someone, or there's somebody that he is not, and in his defense, Joe is one of the nicest, sweetest fucking teddy bears in the world. But if you fucking wrong Joe Bartnick, you have wronged the wrong motherfucker.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not that he's going to physically do anything to you. It's just that he has this look. Like you owe me money, and it's this look.
So you'll pay him even if you don't.
You just start reaching in your pocket. And you're just like he looks at you like that, and you're like, how much? How much do I owe you? How much do I owe you? Because you're like,
so sorry, sir.
Fucking terrifying. I never will wrong Joe Bartnick.
Love that.
One, because I love the guy, but two, I just would never.
You used to want to be in the bad end of that stare.
Never.
Subscribe to the podcast. Also, get your comedy album, Live from Pearl Street.
It just came out, right?
Back in August.
Okay.
Yeah. That's still recent.
It's still recent.
It's less than a year.
Yeah, within the year. And that's available on iTunes. So you can subscribe to the podcast, get the album, Live from Pearl Street on iTunes.
You did that at the Comedy Store in La Jolla.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was awesome, right?
Great room. That was the fucking greatest, man. I go down there every year during the golf tournament. And it's like great because like Ricky Fowler, all the fucking guys come out to the shows.
And your pals with these?
Yeah, they're all buds. They're all fun as shit, man.
Yeah. Do you ever make fun of Ricky Fowler for his fluorescent pants?
Not a fucking no. My kid's like 26 and he's worth like $94 million, and he's the nicest fucking guy in the world.
Do you tell him like, hey man, if there's one piece of advice, stay away from the Denny's waitresses?
No. You should see his girls. Oh.
Do golfer dudes?
Yes.
Major hot pussy.
Yes.
Hot pussy. Bless you.
Like more. Thank you. Like more so than.
More so than anything. More than anybody. Yeah. Anybody.
More so than Rafael Nadal.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the only thing tennis is probably close.
Yeah.
But golf is country club girls.
Yeah.
Oh.
Daughters of wealthy men.
Yes.
Who are so fucking hot. Yeah. That it's like, it's disgusting.
And they're looking for husbands or they're just looking for fun?
A little bit of column A, a little column B.
Yeah, a little column A, column B. I mean, it's like, and you've got like, I mean, supermodel. I mean, just unbelievable.
Here's the thing. Like, when you go to the other sports, yes, you get really attractive women, but they're not of the caliber in terms of the families, the background. They didn't go to the boarding schools. They didn't go to like the golf women, like golf chicks, Formula One chicks, like those women are just like they're another level.
Yeah, I mean, you
they're
get into the NBA wise, and you're talking about worn out vaginas. I mean, these chicks have been fucking.
So it's a difference between like Shasta soda and like really nice A&W
Cristal.
Cream soda.
This is like European soda, man. I mean, it's good soda. I mean, it's good soda.
Sometimes you can have two or three sodas at the same time if you're lucky. That's the best.
I mean, you watch these guys. Look at these guys' wives, man. I mean, you look at the wives. Look at the wives. on these fucking tours.
Does it sometimes not match
unbelievable.
Up? Unbelievable. Oh, like Jack Nicklaus. Does he have a hot wife?
Well, Barbara's like 93.
Yeah.
You know, hey, but she answer
was
the question.
Hot, but she was hot in her day.
Yeah.
But, I mean.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And if you ever, yeah, because if you ever want to see some, go see a PGA Tour event live, not just to see the golf, because there's booze and there's some of the hottest chicks you've ever seen.
So
in your
this
life.
Is why Tiger, I mean, obviously he had a problem, sounds like probably pre-golf.
No,
but
anybody.
He didn't have exposure to these women. Like
he's not a sex addict now.
Right.
No, you're a sex addict when you get busted when you're married.
Yeah.
You know, you're not at nobody. You don't, I don't have a problem if I'm getting fucked all the time now. There's not a problem.
Because you're single. But if you're married, then you have
an addiction.
Yeah.
You have an addiction to fine pussy is what you have an addiction to. And it's like, but yeah, I mean, it's, yeah.
Court, we should have done this a long time ago.
Guys, I'm so happy we did this.
We will absolutely do it again.
Yeah, sooner than later, because I feel like, you know.
Because I want to know what other celebrity bathrooms that you've shit in.
Oh, we could get into those.
Well, I want to know what other animal cages you've gotten blown next to.
We could do those, too.
All right, those are two insane top five lists that we will have next time on the podcast.
And no primates in this one.
Good night, everybody.
So. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.